Today is March 28th, 2018, and this is episode number 455 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I am a teensy, weensy little bit proud that we have a guest today. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, head over to facebook.com/groups/contextmachine. Join in on the conversation.
Brian, your title seemed really weird at first. And I was trying to figure out how we're going to fit that on a business card so it makes sense. Then I realized, no, wait a second. We have a guest today.
We do have a guest today. As a matter of fact, we have Miss Laura Bain, a teacher.
Hi there.
Hey. Who is joining us from Australia in the middle of her school day, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Or should I be saying, g'day, mate?
something about kangaroos too, right?
Yeah. I'll add something about kangaroos later.
So the reason why we have Miss Laura Bain joining us today
is because she's the only person that listens to the show that actually agreed to be on as a guest. No, wait.
That may or may not be true, but the reason why she's joining us today is because she is... let's see, what's your actual title here? Your actual title is e-learning coordinator. Can we name your school?
Yeah, you can. It's the Springfield Anglican College.
It's a private school in Brisbane, Australia. Is that right?
Am I getting
that correct?
Close enough.
And you also teach digital technologies.
I do, yes. That's a new curriculum subject in Australia where we're teaching kids to code and all of those fun things.
So basically, you're the coolest person that we've ever met is what it sounds like.
that is about right. So my understanding is that one of the things that you've done is you've built a makerspace for your class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the last year we've made a makerspace on the primary campus. So that's a flexible learning environment that's full of amazing things for the kids to use, robots, a full fleet of iPads and other computers for them to engage with digital technologies. So the kids are coding and they're creating their own prototypes. It's a really fun space.
And then printing their prototypes? Oh my God, you have a 3D printer?
Yes, we do.
Man.
And you also built a what you call a fab lab, is that right?
Well, that is the fab lab. That's its name. It's not a fabrication lab. We call it the fab lab because it's fabulous, and we do fabulous things in there.
That would be the bell, but this is like, you know, she's truly in the school right now.
So, Laura, so, does this mean you're late for class?
No, it's actually morning tea here.
Well, that is the most awesome thing ever. You stop school for morning tea.
Yes, we do.
which is just crazy. I realized that all the things you do weren't around when I was a kid. I mean, we didn't even have cars yet way back then.
Brian, was the world black and white when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah, it was still black and white. And then we had to dodge dinosaurs on the way to school.
Uh-huh. Oh, man.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal, but don't get me wrong, I did have a computer science teacher who was a math teacher who just happened to be into computers, and she was great in very many ways. But if I had had someone, that was in high school. What am I saying? It was in high school.
Yeah, that was.
If I had had someone like Laura at my school, heading something called e-learning with all the stuff that they get to work with, I cannot imagine how different my life would be today.
Brian, I'm assuming neither of us would have gotten in trouble, and we both would be people that our parents are proud of.
Let's not get carried away.
I'm pretty sure that when my parents' friends say, so what does your son Jeff do? My mom says, oh, he's a dental hygienist.
Oh, That is absolutely hilarious. Nonetheless, you are right smack dab in the middle of the place where, I'm referring to Laura, by the way, in the place where Google and Microsoft and Apple are kind of duking it out.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely a battle going on, isn't there?
In your personal life, my understanding is that you are largely an Apple.
Absolutely, yeah. At home, my home ecosystem, I'm 100% Apple.
And at school, however, well, like give us a rundown of your various titles and certifications.
So at school, we are a one-to-one school. So we have a BYOD school where students bring their own devices. And that's been running for the last couple of years. It's now down to year three. So we have little children bringing their own devices to school. And it first started out a one-to-one iPad program. And in recent years, we're starting to actually phase out our iPads and bringing in full Windows 10 devices.
Ooh, ouch.
Yes.
But you're the one who actually helped lead that.
Yes. That's been part of my decision.
despite being an Apple woman at home, in school, my understanding is that you do like iPads and Macs, but you have been focusing more on the Windows stuff recently.
Yeah, we still have iPads on the primary campus and the secondary campuses. We have trolley loads of them because there's so many amazing things that iPads enable students to do still, especially with robotics and programming and coding. But when it's come to the BYD program and what we're saying our students should be buying for themselves and bringing into the school environment, we have started to recommend Windows 10 devices.
Wow. Can you explain that?
It's there's a few different reasons behind this choice, and it was price definitely became an important thing to consider at the time. We didn't have a cheaper iPad option, and so iPads here in Australia are $600 plus, starting at $600 plus, and then
the new one starts at $459. Is that correct? That's Australia.
That's right. And then on top of that, you usually have to then buy a keyboard, buy the pencil, perhaps a case. Whereas the starting or beginning Windows devices are as cheap as $200.
That's significant. Similar to
Chromebooks, I guess, as well. This is why we've got this battlefield kind of set up in front of us at the moment.
So why didn't your school go with Google and, you know, the Google ecosystem, Chromebooks and you know, the various Google services and whatnot?
It was definitely on the cards. I mean, we're looking at a device that was certainly cheap enough for our parents to invest in. We're looking at a company that's giving a lot of products to teachers and schools for free as well. Privacy was a bit of a concern. There's been a lot of discussion around privacy in education. Google hasn't got a great rep for that. And then...
No, they don't.
Yeah, whereas Apple does, for sure. But it was also the fact that a Google Chromebook is just an online device. That's, you know, we have to work with the apps in their environment only. Not as flexible, I guess, is probably the point.
At this point, not to go into too great a detail, though, your school has the financial luxury of being able to make that choice.
Absolutely, yes.
It's a private school that does very well. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And I mean, which is interesting because, you know, a lot of that you want, my understanding is you're not going to find a lot of the wealthy private schools going with Google, but you will find more and more public schools, at least here in the States. And I'm kind of guessing it's the same in Australia going with Google.
Yeah. And because they're making technology accessible, and that's really important in education.
All right, that makes sense. So the other reason why the main reason this particular show today is to talk about Apple's Let's Make a Field Trip. Let's Take a Field Trip event that happened just yesterday as of this recording.
Or on Australia time last week.
Exactly. The middle of the night.
And to talk about what Apple announced, what kind of impact you might think it would have both in your school and in at the education space in general, and really just kind of talk about the space that is supposed to be so important for Apple with someone who is, you know, in the trenches, like a general in the trenches, I might add, because you are in fact the head of your e-learning for your entire school.
Right.
So, Jeff, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm just enjoying the conversation.
Okay, just checking. So let's see here. We had on Tuesday, what do we have announced? We had, help me out, Jeff.
Okay, let's start with the hardware. We had the iPad and the Logitech Crayon. Those are the two big announcements for hardware.
And a price drop in the pencil.
Only for
education.
Actually, I'm not sure if that's a change. I think education may have been able to get Apple Pencil for $89 already.
Mm.
So I'm kind of thinking there's actually no price changes across the board.
So on the iPad side, what Apple did is, you know, it's faster. It's an improvement from the previous 9.7 inch iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And really the theoretically big news is simply that they added support for Apple Pencil to the device, meaning that they made using an Apple Pencil cost hundreds of dollars less because you don't have to get an iPad Pro.
Right. Yeah. So basically they cut the cost in half if you're looking for an iPad that uses an Apple Pencil.
But Apple Pencil is still freaking $100.
Right. Or $90 if you're buying it through Apple's education program.
Right. $90. So let me just start right there, Laura. How do you feel as this general in the trenches about primary school kids in particular with $100 styluses or $90 styluses US?
Oh my goodness, it kind of freaks me out. Children are children. They lose things. I mean, that's just the nature of it. They're rough with things as well. You need things that are going to stand the test of time as well. So a $99 stylus or pencil is it worries me a little bit.
That makes sense.
Like broken and stolen, lost. What kind of things do you? I mean, like, are realistic?
Broken, stolen, lost, all three. Yes.
Yeah, my assumption
in a school environment.
Yeah, my assumption with an Apple Pencil is that if you hand one to students in a classroom, on day one you have lost the cap that covers the little charging plug.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the week, half of your Apple Pencils won't have the stylus nibs anymore on the tip because they unscrew and just come right off. And so they're lost. So at this point, you've lost the use of half of your Apple Pencils, and now you start dealing with the ones that get rolled over with chairs and broken and lost and stolen. And by the end of the school year, you have, if you're lucky, a quarter of your Apple Pencils still usable.
This isn't uncommon. I have the same kind of problems with the existing styluses we have, which are surface pens and broken nibs, lost, you know, caps and things
cost?
Like that. Those are $100 also. So
you're already using a $100 stylus in your classrooms.
In a lot of classrooms, depending on because it's a BYOD program, it depends which device the children bring. But I already have fleets of surfaces in the Fab Lab and then around other places in the school as well. And yeah, lost surface pens and replacing of nibs and also replacing the batteries inside those. Yeah, it takes a lot of time, a lot of upkeep.
Oh, right. And with an Apple Pencil, you don't replace a battery. So
charge it. But charging is a nightmare when you've got multiple products to charge all at once. If you've mm-hmm. got a fleet of 60 pencils to charge, that's a lot of charging.
That's a lot of charging, yeah.
So I did not realize that the Surface stylus was the same price. And so it you're dealing is. With a lot yeah. of the issues. So you clearly made the decision to do that. So you clearly said, okay, if we're going to go this route, we've got to go with $100 styluses, and that's the direction we're going to take.
That's if they choose. So the devices on my campus are Surfaces. That's what the school has purchased. But if a child chooses to bring another touchscreen device that is not a Surface, there are cheaper versions that have active styluses as well. So there are cheaper versions out there.
All right. So can you tell us why you went with the Surface instead of Apple's iPad-centric education?
So we went down the Windows path because at the time, Windows offered there were a lot of other parties developing devices for Windows that were cheaper. So you have the different price points. You have your entry-level devices that are still touchscreen. They have a stylus. They let the children digitally ink onto the screen, which we in education are finding really valuable and important for kids. And at the time, the only way we could get kids digitally inking with Mac products was to buy a Surface Pro, which in Australia is over $1,200 straight up, plus pencil.
You mean iPad Pro, right?
Oh, sorry. iPad Pro.
I know you have so many devices. I was just clarifying.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. So the only way we could get them to be inking on Mac products was to be buying an iPad Pro, which is a very high price point indeed.
I want to take us down a rabbit hole real quick because you said something that I find absolutely fascinating. You said that inking or using a stylus to write on a tablet surface has turned out to be a big thing, and I want to know why, because in my mind, and yes, I understand that that I come from the black and white world from the time before time, where pencil on paper was the way you took notes effectively. So explain this whole digital
why is that important
thing. Why is that a big thing?
It's about the transition into technology because we still use pencil and paper at schools. It's not gone. But if you're trying to transition young learners into the world of technology, they're not instant typists, for example. They're not great with fine motor in terms of moving a mouse or using a touchpad on a device. But they can draw. They can pick up a pencil and they can draw. And that's the transition between paper to screen and into the world of technology, which then allows greater things like collaboration and great creative, concepts that they couldn't otherwise do on a piece of paper.
Okay. That makes sense.
And and so I take it that the kids that are able to do inking, they are finding this to be really useful, and it's a productive tool for them for note-taking, collaboration, working on projects.
Absolutely. Oh, bell again, sorry.
What bell is that?
Does that mean that morning tea is over?
That's the start of playtime.
Oh, man, I want to go to your school. You get tea time, you get playtime. This is way better than the schools that I went to.
Yeah, no joke. So did the kids get tea?
Not actual tea. Morning tea is just the phrase we use for the break, like afternoon tea, morning tea.
Right. Very British. So,
Brian, I think we need to come up with a new schedule for Mac Observer. We're going to have morning tea. We're going to have afternoon tea.
Oh, yeah. Playtime. Sure. Wait, where does nap time fit in?
If it works the way it does for both of us, probably in the middle of an article.
Yeah. Can we go from morning tea to nap time to afternoon tea? Cause that would really suit me.
No, we have to fit playtime in there too, Brian.
Oh, right. Oh God. Okay. So, all right. Anyway, enough of that. So if you had been able to choose the new iPad when you were making this decision to go with the Surface Pro, would you have done so? Would this have changed your mind?
It potentially could have, because I was limited by what was available at the time, and as I've said to you before, this feels like it's a little bit less too late. You know what I'm saying? It's a little bit too late in a lot of sort of circumstances, especially for me at the moment, now that we've committed down this path with Windows 10 and digital inking devices.
I was wondering if that's what you're going to say. I mean, my okay, so my feeling when I look at the overall when I look at the overall presentation that Apple made yesterday, my feeling was that to some degree, Apple was kind of out of touch with the education market because they were offering up some really great ideas and some really great products, but it felt like it was a little bit too late and in some cases, still a little bit too expensive.
It's certainly an improvement. I mean, they're making their devices more easily accessible to those that can't afford a $1,000 device and all the extras that come with it. But it is a little bit too late in terms of what's been happening in the education space. I think it's great that they've prioritized creativity and the everyone could create pack that they've got coming. That's fantastic, I think, but it is kind of playing catch up a little bit with what's already available free to schools through Google or Microsoft in terms of what just comes standard on their devices.
Yeah. It's almost like Apple has an idea of what they would love the education space to be. And Google has just figured out the best way to get into the channel.
Yeah, so they're imagining what they want it to be and maybe not actually talking to educators and schools in the industry and saying, what do you want? What do you need? What can we do to help you get there? You know, that's probably the conversation that's missing.
So that sounds like a disconnect that is ultimately going to be a problem for Apple.
Yeah, and I think maybe they're starting to realize it now with just with the developments they've made recently. They've gone, oh, hold on. There's a lot of people moving to Chromebooks and the Google, you know, Classroom interface, and a lot of schools are going to Microsoft and Office 365. Why are we missing out?
Well, let me step back a little bit. One of the things that you haven't mentioned is the relative validity and value of the toaster fridge.
That being a touchscreen device.
A touchscreen device that is also designed to work with a keyboard. They can be either the tablet or the laptop, which yes. is what Surface Pro does.
So, Laura, yes. just so you know, Brian is in love with the toaster fridge term now. So you'll hear that.
Yeah, I didn't know what he was talking about originally when he used to say toaster fridge, but I get it now. And that's something that's a little concerning with the new iPads that have been released is they didn't bring the keyboard functionality with it down to these devices. Kids still need a keyboard.
So are you finding that kids, at least in your school, are not interested in using the on-screen virtual keyboard that you can get on tablet devices?
That's fine to a point, but when kids are actually, you know, getting into something a little heavier and actually looking at typing out an essay or something, can you, like, typing on that tiny little keyboard is not great for their hands. It's not actually great for developing any kind of keyboard awareness as well. We're also seeing the priority now with a lot of our standardized testing is being taken over into digital interfaces now or online. And so one of those is obviously a writing task where kids have to write a whole story. Writing a whole story in a tiny on-screen keyboard, that's really hard.
Yeah, I can see that. And
yeah, that makes sense. I mean, to full disclosure, I used to drink the Apple Kool-Aid. The Tim Cook Kool-Aid in particular on the toaster fridges being bad. I would also like to point out that Tim Cook hasn't used the term toaster fridge in a long time, and Apple hasn't denigrated the toaster fridge in at least 2 years that I can recall. Apple used to denigrate it all the time, right? They used to say toaster fridges are awful. They offer an unpleasing experience. You know, devices should do their own thing, et cetera. We have written and spoken a lot at the Mac Observer over the years, mocking the idea of the toaster fridge. But you were the one who actually helped change my mind on this. And then John Keat has been ranting about the subject as well. But
I like you were to the think one who helped change John my mind. Keat wore you down.
No, it is it was Laura that changed my mind.
I did? No.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. You changed my mind. And I wonder with Apple no longer talking smack about toaster fridges, it really makes me think that something is coming. Either one OS to rule them all, which is John Keith's idea, or more Mac-like features on the iPad, or more iPad-like features on the MacBook.
You know, the big thing that Apple needs to do, if they're going to embrace your toaster fridge, is they need to make sure that the touch interface is so transparent and so obvious. And the reason I say this is because I've seen a lot of people working with Surface Books where they start tapping on the screen trying to do something that's intuitive. Like, I want to scroll this window up, you know, from the bottom to the top. So I tap at the bottom of the window and I slide my finger up and it doesn't work. And it's because the whole Windows interface is still geared towards keyboard and mouse specifically, and you're just turning your finger into a mouse pointer. So you still have to go over to the slider bar on the side and do the scrolling from there. And Apple's opportunity here, if they go down this path, is to make this so that it's so obvious how everything works, and it's not simply a port where your finger becomes a mouse. It's a true touch interface on a hybrid device.
Absolutely.
If Apple realized that they were wrong about this, right? Because again, they haven't said anything for a couple of years. Doing the toaster fridge right will take an enormous amount of effort and quite a lot of time. Mm-hmm. So it is extremely conceivable that Apple is working on this now and has been since probably the last time they talked smack about it.
They were probably working on this well before they were talking smack.
I don't actually think that's not Tim Cook's modus operandi, right? Tim always,
but they do a lot of skunkworks projects, a lot of experiments. They do stuff in the labs to see what works and what doesn't.
But he wouldn't be. But Steve Jobs would talk smack about existing products that Apple was actually working on. Mm-hmm. Tim Cook has never done that.
That we know of.
Yeah, this would be the first time. So my guess, I don't know. We don't know, and we might not ever know, but I do feel like some kind of toaster fridge is coming from Apple.
Which is really exciting. I mean, Apple make one of the best touch interfaces on any device. Belle, oh my goodness.
Is playtime over? Because if it is, I'm kind of sad.
Playtime's over. It's not nap time, though. It's back to work time.
Oh, that's the saddest Belle of the day.
Brutal.
But if Apple were to go down the toaster fridge, you know, avenue, they could own the market, because a lot of people have great respect for Apple's products in education. It's sometimes, in a lot of cases, the product of choice. It's just not offering the flexibility and all of the opportunities that other devices are offering at the moment.
Well, so, you know, if we go back to the days when Apple was beleaguered, when Steve Jobs came back to Apple, he made a tremendous effort to get Apple to be competitive in schools. And while there were usually cheaper Windows laptops than, say, the iBook, which was the first major education portable from the new era of Apple, the iBook was always pretty competitive, especially for what you were getting. And As we've gone further and further down that line, though, it seems like Apple just doesn't even care to get that hardware business. I mean, okay, so let me put this another way. And you can answer this question in two ways. One, the $299 price point is a starting point for your school. And then if you can also apply your perspective, because you've worked in public schools as well. Mm-hmm. If you like how is Apple doing price-wise with this device right now in the marketplace, in your opinion?
Well, this will certainly get iPads back into a lot of schools because they did price themselves out a little bit in recent years with the iPad Pro and things like that. But bringing this cheaper device in, we'll see them come back into schools again. I'm fairly certain of that.
All right, so I'm going to jump in with my answer because I can. And my feeling is that for a lot of schools, this will be enticing, but may not be enough to get them to switch from, say, Chromebooks. And I'm talking mm-hmm. United States specifically, where I think this new iPad is going to really shine is in the consumer space. Because now for a much lower price than an iPad Pro, you can get an iPad that has true Apple Pencil support. And I think that's going yes. to be very compelling for a lot of consumers.
Yeah, certainly for consumers. I do wonder, though, about, this will surely expand Apple Pencil sales to consumers. But how is it going to play in the education space? And one part of why I'm asking is because I know my immediate gut reaction was very negative on the pricing. A lot of certainly the echo chamber, the tech punditry was complaining about the price point. I saw the mainstream complaining about the price point. Mainstream tech press was complaining about the price point. But this is why I was very interested in your opinion coming from the trenches, Laura, is how much of that negativity is just, cynical punditry and how much of it is actually in sync with what you're seeing on the ground?
There's definitely two schools of thought around it for sure. But I mean, at the end of the day, schools and teachers just want to get the best tools into the hands of their students. So if dropping the price point on a device that's going to let kids ink on the screen. Sorry, did you lose me there for a second?
For a second, but you were so back.
And now I've lost my train of thought. That's great.
So there were two schools of thought.
Yeah, and you certainly got the criticisms out there about this is, they've dropped the price point, but it's a shaved down device that hasn't got the 4K video. And, just because we're schools, does that mean we're lesser beings? And then you've got the school of thought that's, okay, well, at least it's getting a device into the hands of the children that can't afford other devices that it has a similar capability to as well.
So like what, how do you feel about it? This is a really good question. I hope. New iPad with a pencil, which is going to be about $400. Just under $400 mm-hmm. compared to a Chromebook, compared to a Surface. What's your take on that?
It's at the end of the day, it's still a mobile operating system, isn't it? I mean, the difference is that a Surface or another device that operates using full Windows 10. The potential behind that, it offers a lot more. That,
Windows 10 is more capable than iOS when it comes to some productivity stuff. Are you saying that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of the apps or the apps that children work within on an iOS, they're shaved down versions. They don't have the full functionality. I know for Windows apps, for example, a lot of the accessibility features are lost. So children that have disabilities or learning disabilities don't get those features on an iOS device, whereas using a full Windows device, they do. Mm.
That makes sense. All right. Well, so we kind of banged on the hardware side for a bit.
Oh, we still haven't even gotten to the stylus.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. So, Laura, I'm curious how you feel about the Logitech Crayon. I mean, we have the Apple Pencil, which we've discussed on the show already, and now we have this $49 US stylus that's built on Apple Pencil technology, but doesn't have pressure sensitivity. And instead of plugging into the side of an iPad to charge, it has a lightning connector. So you just plug in a regular iPhone or iPad charging cable to juice it up. So what do you think of this device?
Again, giving a cheaper option to get the technology into the hands of the kids, that's great. But still another, like an example of shaved down features for education. Why do we not get pressure sensitivity and the best experience possible?
Well, it's half the price though.
Yeah. My guess is it comes in at half the price because everything that it takes to get pressure sensitivity to work the way Apple wants to costs a lot of money.
Yeah. So it's good. It's giving an option, right? If you want the pressure sensitivity, pay the extra money.
Let me ask another question related to that, because earlier you mentioned, of course, basically, you know, fine motor controls for kids. How important is the pressure sensitivity for a child?
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. When children are learning to write, they need to understand that you use different pressures to achieve different things. I mean,
needs to be there.
Yeah, well, it's important for kids to learn that pressing softer and harder has different results when you're writing or when you're creating an artwork as well, which children can do on an iPad. Digital art is a really fun thing for them to do.
All right, that makes sense. That makes sense. All right, well, now let's look at some of the software announcements. One of the things that, Apple announced was... let's see, was it Apple School Manager? So you can basically create either individually or in bulk user IDs for shared iPads.
Yeah, which is great. I mean, but that's nothing new in education. Most platforms offer that to teachers straight up, so it's playing catch up again.
All right, fair enough. I actually thought that was pretty cool, but I guess you have a point there if everyone else has been doing that already.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying, Laura, because you could create the IDs in bulk and manage them very efficiently through Google Stools for a while.
So yes.
Did you say Google Stools?
It's also the same through Office 365 as well. Right. It's exactly the same.
Will this make your job easier? Because, I mean, you do still have to create the IDs for those iPads and stuff, right?
Absolutely. It's a great, long-awaited feature that should have been in the system ages ago.
Politely put. All right. Yes. Then we have, boosting iCloud storage to 200 gigs, from 5 gigs. Oh. Huge increase.
Yeah, but maybe not huge enough. I have a terabyte with Microsoft Classroom and Office 365.
What is Apple's deal with storage?
Yeah.
Like, storage is the cheapest thing ever. Storage has never been cheaper, and Apple is the chintziest about it, and they make the most money.
Apple's charging in the consumer space, they're actually a pretty good deal. You can get more storage from Apple than from Google for the same money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last time I checked. But
what does Google start at though? You start off with a lot more.
Right. But when you get to the first paid level, you get, I think it's twice the storage.
I see. So a higher floor and a lower ceiling.
Yeah. There you go.
And Apple's got a much lower floor and a higher ceiling.
There you go. Yeah.
All right. Then we have, you wrote that one up, Jeff.
And that's where I lost you. Are you asking about Everyone Can Create?
Yes.
Yes, I did write that one up. And so Everyone Can Create is, I think, an interesting idea, because what Apple's done is put together some curriculum where you can incorporate creative activities into whatever the learning process is for pretty much any type of class. So you have music, you have video, you have drawing and painting, you know, those types of things that are just incorporated into whatever else you're doing. So I think that's great, because anything that enhances creativity for kids, in my opinion, is a good thing. And then it ties in with the other services that Apple has for the education space, like the schoolwork thing, is it classwork? The thing that's already been there where you can manage assignments?
Schoolwork or classroom?
Classroom.
Classroom has been there and schoolwork is new.
So it ties in with both of those. And I think that's great. So now, instead of having this isolated tool, which is what I feel like Classroom has always been, you now have this tool that's part of a larger suite of things that teachers can use.
Mm. I think this is great. I'm really keen to have a look at it. Obviously, it's not released yet. But this actually says to me that Apple's paying attention to what's contemporary in education at the moment, and creativity is one of the huge buzzwords. It's one of the priorities that a lot of schools are working to develop in their learners. So I think this is a really exciting development. I can't wait to have a look at it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Mm.
Okay, how about the schoolwork?
Which is the workflow tool. So distribute out worksheets or links or different resources to the class and collect it.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's great. It's all about workflow when it comes to, especially in a class of one-to-one devices. So anything that enables a smoother workflow between teacher and student, that's a step in the right direction.
Now, is schoolwork the platform that lets teachers create the handouts and other learning materials they want to give to kids?
Mm.
Yes.
Okay. So my question there is, are we putting too much onto teachers? Because at least in the United States, teachers are overworked, underpaid. And is this something that, while it can be an incredibly powerful and useful tool, is also just throwing a bigger burden onto teachers? And I'm not tossing this out like I'm trying to be negative. I'm just really curious how this fits in.
It really depends, how teachers are bringing in their resources into it. If they have to create new resources within the interface, then yeah, that could be a burden. If they can bring in existing resources or external resources, I think it's a positive. It gives you a new way to smooth down that workflow, not have to print out 1,000, worksheets or something like that. And so it just depends how the interface itself works and where you can source from. Most teachers have to create their own content or create their own resources as well. But adding to the teacher's workload is never going to go down very well. So that's yet to be seen.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, let me take us in a slightly different direction. Laura, I don't think we mentioned this one to you, but Jeff, did you read that piece from, is it Brad Chambers?
Yeah, is that over at 9 to 5 Mac?
Yeah, 9 to 5 Mac, Bradley Chambers, yeah. He's a teacher. He writes about education at 9 to 5 Mac. And he wrote a pretty good, very good analysis of Apple's education announcements.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting because of the way he compared Apple's last event, which was several years ago. I mean, it's crazy how long Apple goes between their education events. And his takeaway was most everything Apple announced and tried to do with their previous education event, nothing's actually happened there.
He didn't find any foothold in the marketplace, was his take on that.
Yeah.
But what I think was more interesting about the piece was his suggestion at the end that if Apple wants to do education, then it should actually be Apple in education, and it should make a point of owning key technologies within that space. So his suggestion is that Apple basically take a portion of this ridiculous amount of money that it has and go buy a textbook maker, go buy the companies necessary to be able to make an all-inclusive education platform that actually solves problems, and including the big one, which is the cost of at least a big one, the cost of textbooks.
You know, the whole textbook thing in his piece, I found to be fascinating, because the idea of creating a whole platform where you're buying the hardware, in this case iPads, but then you're getting everything else for free, including the textbooks, which is a huge financial burden for schools. That's very compelling. The other side of that for me, though, is, does Apple want to be in the position where they're responsible for creating the content that's being taught in schools?
That is, okay, so here in the States, and Laura, you can tell us how it works in Australia, but here in the States, every individual state controls the textbooks that are being used, or that are allowable. And that ends up with some weird dynamics, because the textbook companies want to go for the big markets. So Texas has an outrageously disproportionate effect on the rest of the country's textbook selection, simply because their market is so big that the textbook companies, many of the textbook companies are catering their content for them. And of course, then you end up bringing in various political and socially conservative and versus socially liberal fights. And, you know, you can get weirdness going on there. I don't think Apple per se, I don't think Tim Cook needs to be involved in that sort of thing, but Apple could own a textbook company that is still competing to provide textbooks for the rest of the industry. But what Apple could do as the owner of that is make sure that the licensing and the rights and the management of those textbooks actually makes sense for the schools, to wit, being able to reuse the same textbooks that have been bought for a device from year to year.
Right, that which sort you of currently thing. Can't do with the digital versions of the textbooks.
On iPad.
Can you do it on other platforms?
That I don't know.
Maybe Laura does.
It really does depend who you're purchasing through. But yeah, it is possible, depending on which company you purchase digital textbooks through. The license is owned by the school, and they can be reused over the years.
Okay, that's good.
So what do you think of the idea, as you know, we're channeling someone else's idea to you? What do you think of this idea that, you know, if Apple wants to be a player in education, that it should turn around and, you know, buy the resources and develop the resources to be a truly good competitor?
Certainly creating resources and making them accessible to those that can't afford good quality resources, that would be a wonderful thing to do. There's a very gray zone when it comes to addressing curriculum objectives. Here in Australia, we have a national curriculum, but then our education systems are governed state by state also. So it's the same as in America. I think you have a common core curriculum, but then your education systems are governed state by state, as you were saying. There is a bit of a gray zone there, because there's influences of those individual states and the way that curriculum's addressed in those schools that comes into play. So I don't know if they could necessarily design a textbook for the purpose of use by all, but certainly resources. No, but
they could own the textbook company that does that. And that textbook company could continue to do what it does in terms of developing content.
Absolutely,
whereas
yeah.
Apple could control... could control licensing, distribution, and rights management on iOS devices, or Macs for that matter.
Mm-hmm. I think if there's any company that could do it that would have the maintain a level of academic integrity, it would be a company like Apple for sure.
Sure. You know, and Apple is the thing. When I was reading through Mr. Chambers' piece, you know, I think about how much money Apple has.
That's what they have.
They essentially have all of the money. There's nothing that Apple couldn't do if it decided it wanted to do it. And I just, you know,
where can they give back? Education, right?
Right. To this thing that they keep talking about, how this is part of Apple's DNA. Right. You know, like, education is super important to us. Yeah. Okay. I get that. Now let's put your money where your mouth is.
Exactly. High five.
All right. Well, I guess we solved that.
Well, that's great. Now,
that was easy.
Now all Tim needs to do is sign the check.
Yeah, just do it. Yeah. just do it, Tim. You're welcome.
So we have like 10 minutes left. So what I want to know now is, how do you feel about Apple's new take on collaboration in the classroom? Because, you know, they added in the new collaboration features in the iWork suite for iPad. And to me, that just seems like a really great thing. But I'm not in school, so I don't really know.
It is fantastic. But again, it's playing catch up. I've been able to do that through Office 365 for like the last 3 years. But it's fantastic for education. It's fantastic to have kids working in collaborative groups on the same piece of work. They see the power of technology and what technology can enable then. Even more fantastic is getting children working from different schools in the same project because of the collaboration features within a tool. So this is great. It's, again, a step in the right direction, but a little bit late.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
That makes sense. So what would, what's the one thing, like, what's the one thing that you don't have that you wish you did have for when it comes to your job as e-learning coordinator?
What's the one thing I wish I had that I don't have?
Yeah. Like what is the hole that's not being filled in your area of education?
So I work in a primary context, so it's a little bit different. But for me, I find there's no learning management system that is child friendly, especially for younger students. And they're the gateway into the big world of technology as well. Getting the younger students into technology early is going to be more powerful for them, and it's going to breed the next generations of amazing, you know, technology innovators. But there's no learning management systems that are very focused on young learners or that work really well on something like an iPad. A lot of them are very clunky and designed for even tertiary institutions, universities or high schools. So there's a bit of a gap in terms of what's being offered across education.
So would that be like a refinement of or overhaul of interfaces, or is it even more than that?
It probably is a little bit bigger than that. Like, there's a lot of little solutions to lots of little things that you have to use. So you're jumping into one interface for one thing, one interface for another thing, then you're moving into something else. It'd be great to have just that one big solution that pulled everything into one place, that was designed for children, that was, you know, user-friendly, that cut down teachers' workload as well.
So is this your next job?
Yeah. Hey, Apple, if you need a designer, here I am. Give me a call.
Yeah. Yes. Apple, call Laura, even though she's been on the show.
Yes, exactly. Even though she's been on the show. All right, Laura, I want to thank you so much for joining us and sharing your perspective. I mentioned this earlier, but, you know, it's one thing when the echo chamber, you know, yaks away about stuff, especially, you know, like, you know, those of us who have never taught in our lives, it's another thing to actually hear from the people who are actually doing the job about how it affects them. And your perspective has been invaluable.
Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. And getting to hear about the tools from someone who's deep in this has been great.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, did I hear a rumor correctly that your school is also building a recording studio?
Yes.
Again, my life. Where would my life be? How different would my life be today had I been able to go to your school with you as a teacher?
I think your life would be markedly different.
Markedly different. Can't even imagine. Can't even imagine.
But all this right, is well, what we're just saying. If Apple gets into this and provides these opportunities across education to people that wouldn't otherwise have them, think about the lives they could change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. All righty. Well, Jeff, do that thing.
All right. I know exactly what thing to do. Well, if I can find the right button. Apparently, I don't know exactly the right thing to do. I need a teacher like Laura. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Indeed, we want to thank Laura for joining us one more time. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.